This is the Cato Daily Podcast for Monday, August 29th, 2022. I'm Caleb Brown. In the wake of an assault on the author Salman Rushdie, it's worth remembering that even mainstream Muslims take a relatively hard line on blasphemy and other disrespect to Islam. So what do more liberal Muslims have to say to their fellow Muslims about tolerance and the freedom of expression? Cato's Mustafa Akyol, author of Reopening Muslim Minds, comments.
Well, there are almost 2 billion Muslims around the world, and they have different opinions about freedom of expression. Most of them will probably tell you that, of course, there should be some freedom of expression. People can express their ideas, but they will say there are certain limits. And blasphemy, that is disrespect to God, the Prophet, or the Quran, would be a limit. Again, that's, I think, a mainstream view. And I'm a critic of this mainstream view, but I should say that at least this mainstream view doesn't as go far as giving death fatwas on authors like Salman Rushdie as vigilante violence or, you know, acts of terrorism. That's an extreme position. But still, this mainstream view thinks that people should be taken to courts if they write books or say things that are disrespectful to Islam, which, of course, routinely happens in not all, but many Muslim majority societies. And there is a more liberal position that, liberal in the classical sense, that I myself espouse, which is, while we Muslims have values, of course, we don't want to see our values being disrespected, but people should be able to do that. It's not a crime. We also sometimes disrespect, you know, other people. You know, Islam has certain statements about polytheism, about this belief. So in a world that is fair to everybody, nobody should be persecuted for their beliefs and opinions. So that view certainly condemns terrorist attacks on so-called blasphemers, real or perceived. And that also goes against the idea of punishing them through legal mechanisms as well.
I think, at least as far as the West is concerned, Iran's identity has been in part defined by its death threats issued against Salman Rushdie, who, of course, recently was attacked in New York. So when you try to advance this more liberal view of how Islam should view the freedom of expression, what do you hang your hat on?
Well, I mean, this whole Salman Rushdie affair has a history of 33 years by now. I think the novel was, or 34, and the novel was published in 1988. And the Satanic Verses, the famous novel. And actually, I think it was the first incident in the West which raised question marks about the tension between Islam and freedom of expression. It was published in the UK, and some Muslims demanded that the book should be banned, and the British government did not, and it turned into a controversy. But while many Muslims wanted the book to be banned, which I think was not the right idea in the beginning, not everybody went as far as saying, you know, the author Salman Rushdie and the publishers should be killed for it, right? That was the Iranian position. Ayatollah Khomeini, who was the founding leader of the Iranian Republic, and leader of the Islamic Revolution, he gave this infamous fatwa and saying that good Muslims should kill Salman Rushdie, and there's a prize for it, but also God will reward such an action. Of course, after that incident, the word fatwa itself became infamous in the West, which is, of course, a misunderstanding. Fatwa is a legal opinion, so you can have a liberal fatwa on something as well, but this was a grim fatwa. Why Iran did this? I mean, that's partly political, because after the Iranian Revolution of 1979, the so-called Islamic Republic of Iran claimed to be the staunchest defender of Islam by outbidding other countries, you know, that act in the name of Islam. And partly because Iran is Shiite, so it is a little bit disadvantageous, you know, in its claim for leadership in the Muslim world. Most Muslims are Sunni. Iran wanted to show how actually heroic and staunch and brave in its defense, which also comes out its extreme militancy on Israel as well, compared to most of the Arab countries who are ready to make a peace with Israel, whereas Iran, you know, calls for Israel's destruction. That's a more radical position. On the fatwa too, you know, Khomeini gave this verdict, and then Salman Rushdie went to hiding, And over the years and decades, many people thought that, this is maybe passé. I mean, maybe Iranians are not too big on this anymore. It's an old issue. But I think this recent attack on Salman Rushdie in the middle of upstate New York shows that, you know, some of these people do not forget, you know, what they want to do. And so it was like a sober, I think, reminder that some attacks on free speech are always there. You know, they will not go away over time.
So when you advance the idea that freedom of expression ought to be respected by Muslims, most especially when it is criticism of some aspect of Islam, what do you say to other Muslims?
Well, there are rational arguments and religious arguments that I advance, and not just me, but several academics or scholars with, let's say, liberal views on this matter who have written about this issue, not just the Salman Rushdie affair, but the broader issue of blasphemy laws in Islam. They've also said the same things. First of all, there are religious arguments. One is that, first of all, what are the bases of Islam? It's the Quran, the scripture, and the actions of the Prophet Muhammad, right? That the letter is called Sunnah, the example of the Prophet. Actually, there's no basis in the Quran for blasphemy laws. The Quran condemns that, you know, those who disrespect God will be punished by God in the afterlife. But it doesn't say people should be killed on earth, you know, for what they say. Like much of what we call Islamic law, the Sharia, actually the word comes from not the Quran, but later interpretations. And there are some actions of Prophet Muhammad that was taken as basis for blasphemy laws. These are stories about certain poets in Mecca and Medina during the time of the Prophet who were executed by first Muslims. These are written, again, not in the Quran, but later biographies of the Prophet, which were written like 150 years after his passing. So even you can doubt their authenticity. But I also make the argument that even if those certain poets were executed for being against Muslims, they were not just mockery. They were not just doing mockery or blasphemy. They were actually inciting war against the Muslims. So that was a different context. Whereas you have stories of people insulting the Prophet and him doing nothing. You know, he just forgives. It's quite interesting, though, that later Islamic jurists said that the Prophet could forgive because it was his personal honor. He could forgive, but we cannot forgive. That's, again, a very subjective argumentation. You can, quite the contrary, said if he forgave, we can forgive people too, you know, for disrespecting him. So there are these religious arguments. And also there is a rational argument that, well, we live in a modern world. It's different than what 7th century Arabia was, where poets could start wars. If we want to fit into the modern world, we need freedom of expression as well, right? I mean, there are people who would say, oh, this verse in the Quran is offensive, or this idea in Islamic traditions offensive, so let's ban it. Instead of that, we need freedom of expression for Muslims and for non-Muslims as well, so we should come to a rational common ground. And these arguments are made by various scholars, some of them I personally know and follow their work, like Mohsen Kadivar in Iran has written about this. There is a new book by a few academics challenging blasphemy and apostasy laws in Islam. So the idea is out there. And of course, how that is translated into policy or how Muslim masses understand this, that's a different discussion. But I can say that there are quite a few Muslims around the world who see these attacks on authors like Salman Rushdie and saying that there is no good in this. This only brings shame to our religion. And, you know, we should be more civilized about this. There's certainly that sentiment that has to be nurtured by argumentation. But obviously, there's also a very strong sentiment to punish people for blasphemy, which is quite a burning problem in Pakistan, Iran, Saudi Arabia, and some other countries, and in some among some hardline Islamist groups.
You and I have discussed in the past charges and convictions for blasphemy against Islam in some predominantly Muslim countries. What do you think the impact of that is, and what do you think it will be going forward? Is there any effort in a lot of these countries to try to roll back some of these laws?
Well, I think the counterproductive result of trying to ban blasphemy is to cause more blasphemy, right? Because when you say we are killing people in the name of Islam, if they don't respect Islam and our Prophet, we will punish them for this. That only makes people not respect the Prophet, but quite the contrary, think that there's not much to respect in this religion. So we Muslims often, rightly, most of the time, complain of Islamophobia, you know, bias against Muslims, a very negative view of Islam. I myself write against that. But I think with actions like blasphemy laws, apostasy laws, or other acts of violence or intolerance in the name of Islam, some Muslims are partly causing Islamophobia. So therefore, it's one argument is that, well, if we want people to respect our faith as we would like them to do, we can't do that by controlling the way they speak. We can only do that by controlling our reaction to what they say about our religion. And the more mature we are and the more tolerant we are, actually, there will be more respect to our religion and maybe more interest in our religion as well. And there are strong grounds for that in the Quran. I mean, there are verses which says, you know, when people mock your faith, just do not sit with them, you know, just move away silently from them. And there are verses, there's one verse which says, when people are against you, hostile towards you, respect, return with good behavior, and that will, you can see that person as a friend to you. So there is this kind of almost turn the other cheek attitude in the Quran, which was not taken as very important by medieval Islamic jurisprudence, which took place in the context of medieval warfare and conquest. And but I think today we're living in a different world and a new interpretation of Islam, which highlights those more tolerant and magnanimous messages in the Quran as the definitive Muslim attitude on issues like blasphemy or other matters that relate to human freedom.
Cato Institute Senior Fellow Mustafa Akyol is the author of Reopening Muslim Minds. Please give a rating to the Cato Daily Podcast on your podcast platform of choice and follow us on Twitter @CatoPodcast.